You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, you lot. Welcome back to Glittering a Turd. If this is your first time here, welcome. Come in. Take a seat. Make yourselves comfortable. Talking of seats, I'm currently sitting in my new house. I had to move after my landlord decided he wanted his house back, which is totally fair enough. It is his house. He can want it back when he wants. Obviously, that completely threw me off course. The rental property market is not exactly booming at the moment, and I really struggle with change. So at the time, it was kind of awful news. But now that I'm in this new place, I'm thinking that it was probably for the best, because I'm about to start new cancer treatment. It's almost like a new chapter, and maybe I needed these fresh new four walls to do all this stuff in. So sometimes these things turn out to be not as bad as you think. And that's kind of the theme of today's conversation that I have with my guest, David Gandy. He also had to find a whole new route to do with his career. And yeah, you'd totally be forgiven for wondering what hardships a beautiful white man such as David Gandy would be facing in his life. I totally wondered that too. But as ever, we will learn that turds find their way into everybody's lives, even the really, really handsome ones. Turns out turds do not discriminate. So I will let you have a listen. And then I would very much love it if you supported my podcast by subscribing or following it on whichever podcast app you're currently listening from. Enjoy. So you probably know David Gandy from an image of him lying topless in white swimming trunks on a boat surrounded by turquoise water in the sunshine, modelling for Dolce & Gabbana. He's modelled all over the world for some of the biggest brands, has now created his own clothing line called David Gandy Wellwear, and is also an ambassador for Vitabiotics Wellman, as well as being an ambassador for many great causes like Battersea Cats and Dogs Home. And today, he is even lucky enough to talk to me about turds. So, David, how are you?
I'm okay. Looking forward to talking about turds, which is a totally new one on me, which is very, really good.
Tried to keep things interesting around here. Let's just go straight into it, shall we?
Yeah, go for it.
What turd would you like to bring to the table today?
There's probably quite a few I could bring. I always sort of say that, as you put it, bringing a turd to a table, that there's been a few, but you sometimes, I always say you learn from mistakes more than anything. So the pinnacle one was, I think everyone kind of, I probably believe that I was sort of thrusted into the fashion industry, and I was on a glamorous boat in glamorous conditions, and I was working with supermodels and great photographers, and that wasn't the case whatsoever. I think it was about sort of 4 years of plugging away within the industry. I finally got what I believed was a break with a very, very big brand, American brand, who I always wanted to work with. And we spent many, many days, hours. I went for castings, and we had to go through the rigmarole of all these different areas. And I was pretty much packed, ready to go on my first, what I thought was most prestigious shoot ever, that was going to project my career and catapult me. And I was literally just about to get in a car, and I got a call from my agent who said they've literally just dropped you.
Wow.
And they've decided to go a different way. At that point, after 4 years of waiting for this opportunity, it was a little bit hard to take. And I think that's about the only point in the industry where I thought I've just had enough now. But then it took me it gave me a push and a bit of momentum to realize then of how I needed to sort of control my career personally and control the industry rather than the industry controlling me. And that's when I completely changed. I was literally after a month later, I told the head of my agency, this is the areas, what we're doing, the way we're working, commercial, I wasn't doing campaigns, but sort of catalog modeling. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And it was either completely turning right instead of turning, going left and completely changing, which no one had really done before, and set out a plan and strategy to where we were going to go. And that road led us in the end to Dolce & Gabbana, which of course then did catapult my career. It was, I always say I wouldn't be here without Dolce & Gabbana. And it started with the campaign. Then whilst I was doing their show in Milan, after shooting the campaign, it led to Light Blue, and of course that's when things really started to happen. But it took almost that shock element of many ways of having that disappointment, and almost just didn't want to come back. Just thought it was failure. And I always say it takes a lot to come back from, to pick yourself up again and carry on, and still have the belief that you can do very well in the industry that's literally just try to knock you down, and the industry, the fashion industry is one of those.
Well, I guess because your career in fashion didn't really happen because you wanted to be a model or you thought this is going to be my life, because obviously you were at uni, didn't then end up finishing uni because you won the competition on This Morning to be a model for Select, the agency Select Models. And I guess after that, not everyone gets a career break like that, do they? So up until that point of being dropped so last minute for something that I guess you were very pumped about, were things fairly plain sailing? Did you go, actually, this is okay? And did you have a kind of a warped way of seeing your career and how things are going, and you needed that sort of, mate, it's not always this easy, and you needed that sort of reality check?
Yeah, no, there definitely wasn't any reality check needed. I was definitely sort of, you'd have that reality check the first time you are sort of chucked into a show season in Milan, and you're there with thousands of guys going around to hundreds of appointment with a sweaty t-shirt that is passed around by 100 sweaty guys you've got to try on to get a shot, which I actually refused to do. But there's moments always, Chris, that I always had quite a probably strong head on my shoulders. I was a little bit older than a lot of the guys that started. A lot of them could have been 16, 17, 18. I was 21, nearly 22. But it's tough. It's a tough industry. There's lots of competition. You can't take it personally. And this is what I say to guys. You are judged at the end of the day on the way you look and the way you present yourself that day. That isn't anything personal from the brands or the people casting the brands. I now have to do that myself. It's just they have a creative and they have an image and a story they need to tell, and they need to find the person or the face to do that. But of course, from a point of view, it can be anything. It's like you're too short, you're too big, you're too small, you're anything. It could be. So you are picked apart a little bit. And once you have done 4 years of that, it's difficult. I wasn't not earning any money. I was doing okay, but in catalogs and more commercial work. But I knew where I wanted to be, and it wasn't about money. It was about sort of the prestige. It was about being one of the best in the industry. And I believed, and my agency believed in me, that we could do that. There's many stories, Chris, to where this has happened before. In my first season for Dolce, I went to go and cast for that, and it was the only show that I got that season in my first year, and I didn't really do show seasons after that. But when you go and do Dolce's, you get cast, and then you go and fit a couple of days later to they choose the what you're going to wear for the show, and then you go downstairs to their barber shop, and they give you the what they call it at the time, like the Dolce haircut. With the time they leave it quite long on top, and they had to shave the sides of your head. And that, you know, everyone has this, the same style on the show. And I couldn't do that because I was on option for quite a big campaign with someone else. So I went back to Domenico and Stefano and said, guys, I can't do this because I'm on, you know, they want longer hair for this other campaign, and I can't cut my hair. And they came back to us and said, and Domenico and Stefano were brutally honest, and they said, David, you either cut your hair or you don't do the show. And I decided not to do the show. And I walked away from it because I thought there was a chance of getting this other big campaign. You have to make those decisions. It just turns out that I didn't do the show and I didn't get the campaign. So it wasn't a particularly very good week. So that's the, you know, those elements there, those catalysts of those bad times within the industry is what catapulted it, you know, forward in many, many ways. And that's why I always say you learn from the, you know, you learn from mistakes, or you learn from a bad experience in many ways.
So can I just go back to you? You said that, you know, if you don't get a campaign, if you don't get chosen for a show, you can't take that personally. Was anyone telling you that when you first started out? Because, I mean, you've been in the industry for a long time now, and young lads, you were 21. Does anyone tell you to check in with how you're actually feeling about these things and rejection, how to deal with rejection?
Good agencies will. Good agencies are there to support. I always had a great support network with Select Model Agency. It's not about telling you not to take things personally, but they will tell you that, and they'll tell you that there's bigger and better things to be had. Hopefully you have the support network and an agency that still believes in you to move forward. And as with Tandy Anderson, I don't believe there would have been a lot of owners of sort of modding agencies would have said to me, fine, okay, let's drop every bit of work you have, because we need to completely change your branding. And they were willing to lose, you know, a lot in percentage of money, and I was willing to take that chance. And hopefully you can see, hopefully 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line, what you could be achieving. And where I wanted to be was up there with the female supermodels. That was the platform that we chose.
Why did you want to change that? Why did you want to be up there with the Kate Mosses and the supermodels?
I suppose if you're going to go into industry, I suppose if I'm going to go into a career and I put my all into it and I dedicate myself to that, I suppose I want to be one of the best. Same as being in sports, anything else. That's why I push myself and dedicate myself to that element to make it one of the best. You know, it's the same with when I'm working with brands and I'm ambassador for brands. I want that brand to do very well, and I want that collaboration to be one of the best collaborations. If I build Wellware, I want it to become very authentic. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, in some ways, why bother doing it? And if you can make a change with that brand as well and make a difference.
Have you always been like that? Were you like that as a kid as well?
Competitive.
Yeah, yes, I suppose competitive.
Yeah, like super competitive. Played every sport I could, wanted to win every game. I know it's about competing. I know everyone will tell you about competing, but which is a lovely side to it. But I always wanted to win. That was not at the cost of anything. I mean, always wanted to be the best and wanted to win at something if I was taking part in it. You know, that was the whole point. And that's what I always kind of wanted to do. And that was the industry. And if it was any other industry, I'd probably be the same. That's just my nature. It's got to be a level-headed side to, you know, what you're in, and to know your, I suppose, to know your limitations. I mean, I if I could be anything in the world, and I still say it to this day, what I wanted to be was be a veterinary surgeon. But I knew my limitations, that I was never going to get there. I was never going to get the grades to be able to do that. So that's why I fell upon this path into the fashion industry, but could see where it could be taken, and could see a gap in the market is really where it is. And that's where the marketing and the branding and strategy came in.
So I guess having that drive and being quite sort of competitive and thinking, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. Having that massive knockdown and not getting that massive gig that you so, I guess, felt really like you'd worked really hard for. I guess you having that strength and that determination must have really helped you to think, no, okay, well, this one wasn't meant to be. Let's try something else. And obviously, with the help of your agent, you then thought, well, let's rethink this and work on, yeah, really rebranding in a way. So how did it, how did it feel? You took a risk. You thought, okay, this wasn't meant to be. I'm not going to do catwalk shows anymore. I'm not going to do catalogs. Is that right? Not catwalks or catalogs anymore.
Yep.
And then go, you know, put something together, show Dolce & Gabbana what you can do. And then to actually finally get that gig, what was that like?
It happened so quickly, Chris. I got to say, like, we were, Dolce got me back to do the show in 95, 96. And then whilst I was on the show, my agent called me and said, we're talking about a fragrance, and the fragrance is when you get a fragrance, not so much these days, but it's still one of the biggest things in the industry. You can, because you have a fragrance contract. Mm. And we started, you know, we're negotiating on something. We're not sure what it is. It is Dolce. And within 2 days of me being in Milan, I literally got walked off the runway, got into a car to the airport to go to Capri. Wasn't sure what the fragrance was, wasn't sure what the concept was, didn't know who the photographer was, turned out to be Mario Testino. Met the crew the next morning. We took speedboats over to Capri. We shot Light Blue. That was my involvement in it at the end of the day. And, you know, but why I was cast for that is because they wanted this more classical looking, muscular model face of the brand at the time. And at the time when I was in modeling, everyone was really getting skinnier. Everyone was going for the more androgynous, skinny look, and I went the complete opposite because I was never a slight guy anyway. I was always slightly bigger and played lots of sports. And so when everyone said, you're not fitting into, I used to go to castings after castings where I couldn't fit into sample sizes. So I was called, a couple of the designers called me the big guy. Oh, the big guy's here. He won't fit into our clothing. So you wouldn't get the job. I suppose a lot of people would have thought, okay, I need to get smaller, and I got bigger. So, which probably doesn't make much sense to people, but I kind of saw within the within circuits of fashion, within the circles, it fashions change, and so do the models. And it was just waiting for an opportunity. And there's a saying that there's no such thing as luck, just a well prepared person waiting for an opportunity. And hopefully that was me. So yeah, I you don't know how big the campaign's going to be, of course. It wasn't until I saw the campaign virtually the same time as everyone else. So I didn't know what the campaign image was. And then from that campaign image going up in London, going up into to Times Square, I literally saw it 2 hours before on my phone because my agent sent it to me. And then it just took off, of course. And then the next day it was press wanting interviews and wondering who this guy was. And we went from there. So of course you don't know that's going to happen. You don't prepare for that. You don't say this campaign is going to have 11 million hits on the first, first few weeks, because you're not prepared. And then we had to change very, very quickly and deal with press and PRs and bring in more teams. But like all things, if I achieve something, sometimes I allow myself a couple of days of enjoyment with it, but then I want to use that. I want to catapult from that. And how I saw this, and maybe a lot of guys would have sat on their laurels and said, that's fine, like I've got that campaign. I saw a much bigger play, a much bigger strategy of how then I could make a name and brand that name. And I had a collaboration with M&S starting 2012-2013. That idea of collaborating with a brand was in the making of 5 years. I already knew that's where I wanted to be in 5 years' time. So that's 5 years, is then building the next 5 years. The 5 years I'd got to was to get Dolce and to get a big campaign. The next 5 years after that was to get to the next point. And then after M&S, I knew at one point that I would want my own brand, which is the hardest thing to do.
It seems like the long game, isn't it? Like, because 5 years is quite a long time, isn't it, to kind of go, nope, I just got to be in it for the long game and we'll get there. And that takes real sort of confidence, I think. And
it does, yeah. Now in a world where we want everything yesterday, at the end of the day. So there's a lot of models who say, how did you get to where you did? And if I can say to them, well, it took me 5 years to get to this point, 5 years to get to this point, 5 years. And they said, what? So I'm looking at 10 years. And I said, it could be, yeah.
But, oh, you can't say that to a young person now. That'll put them right off.
Hopefully not. You know, that's why hopefully we do these things sometimes, to tell people it's about patience. Yes, it's about perseverance, and it's about knowing your limits. Perseverance is one of the most important things in the world if you truly believe something. But patience is a massive virtue as well.
Can we talk about social media for a minute? Because obviously when you started off, mm-hmm. no one was necessarily... People were judging your body and your looks maybe on a billboard or on telly or, you know, in print, but not on a little phone. And they couldn't readily tell you whether if they liked what they saw or they didn't, or they were jealous or whatever, you know. Wherever someone's negative comment comes from, we can't know that for sure. But and today you're still in that fashion world, you're still, you know, you're casting models yourself who are probably dealing with a different kind of body confidence to the one that you dealt with when you started out. What have you noticed in these, what, like 20 years that you've been in this game now?
As you said, there was no social media virtually when we shot Light Blue. That's why I'm still talking about internet hits, which seems such an old sort of fashion way of gauging something now. Things have changed massively. And from my point of view, from creative, I'm saddened to, we were talking about it at a lunch we just had, is you know, the great advertising that you used to see, the great Vogue editorials, GQ editorials, all these incredible magazines with incredible photographers that, you know, have shaped the way the fashion industry looks and has inspired people and are pieces of art in many ways. You know, people, there are books of all these campaigns, and you don't see that anymore. You know, it's like a lot of brands are using digital influencers to create their own content. Not saying there's anything wrong with that current content, some of it's a lot of creative, but we're seeing video formats, of course, now. TikTok, Instagram is going more video, so we're moving further and further away from the still image. And it's a very hard thing to do, to sell something in one image, in one still image. You know, that you've got to catch people's imagination, tell a story, cast the right people. It's very, very difficult. Probably why a lot of people don't do it. So it saddens me we don't see that much anymore. With body confidence and image, with social media, I believe it does put a lot of pressure on a lot of people. You're seeing so much content now, so many fitness videos, so many dieting videos. So there's a lot of information, which is a good thing, but sometimes you can have too much information, too much overload. And a lot of people that are not experts in particularly any of these fields. So it's difficult to know what is the right information and what is the wrong information. Social media is not regulated in many forms whatsoever. And that's what people have to understand, especially with children. You know, we have done a lot of work with, or some work with Child Line, understanding how these impact children, how being addicted to our mobile phones, and we are all addicted to it. I'm not saying just children, but we are all addicted to our mobile phones. Mm-hmm. It's a massive problem. It's a huge change, and it's happened very, very quickly. But I can't see us going back to anything like it was back in 2006 when I did sort of Light Blue. I always say now I would not to be where I was today if I was to start as a model. Now it would have completely been changed. It's all about followers and engagement and recording your whole life virtually on social media, which I keep my private life, as I say, well, it's called private.
Yeah,
I'm never really willing to delve into that much. So it has changed a lot.
And are you quite glad about that? Are you glad that social media didn't exist when you first started out, so you didn't have to see and read people's opinions on the daily like young people do now?
There are still people, a majority of people, we do on our social media, we don't accept any negativity. Mm. There's a lot of positive comments. Unfortunately, with anything anyone can relate to this, is that if you have 1,000 comments, if you read 999 good ones, you don't remember them. You remember sometimes the one negative one.
Oh, yes.
and it's giving people a lot of voice, and there's a, you know, a lot of, everyone has a bad day, you know, at the end of the day, everyone can say things off the cusp, and it gives that those people an opportunity not to think about what they're saying, not to, you know, not to take a breath, just to quickly type something. And I think a lot of people are judged on stuff they put on social media, and you have to understand, you have to give them a chance.
When did you wear an outfit and feel your most amazing? What outfit was it, and where were you?
My goodness, that's a good question. You see, that I'm not sure if I can name that. I try to. I think we all probably put on an outfit, and we instantly know, we feel confidence in what we're wearing, and that confidence can exude throughout the day. I also think we can be uncomfortable in outfits, whether that's the style, whether that's the fit, whether that's the materials, and that can, you know, I always think that can bother me, in something that I'm, you know, which is not me in many ways. That was one of my biggest things in fashion. You know, I was a model, you know, almost like a mannequin that would go to a shoot and someone would dress me in something that, and you could see the difference between someone put me in something I absolutely loved. I would be confident and happy and work so much harder at that shoot. If they're putting something you're not comfortable in, you could see instantly that my persona would completely change and I wasn't happy being there. So that's when much more of my sort of creative side came out, where I'd have a much more say in what was being, you know, what was being worn. And you know, I've been very fortunate enough to receive awards for my style credentials, and that I've never had a stylist in my life. I wore what I believed was stylish clothing, whether people believed it was or not. I didn't mind it. It was what I wanted to wear. It took a lot of inspiration from old Hollywood stars, but from classic pieces, which included t-shirts and joggers and sweatshirts. And if you go back, you look at, you know, sort of James Dean, Steve McQueen, all these greats that men aspire to, they're in t-shirts and chinos and sweatshirts. And, you know, it wasn't as we see on the red carpet or, you know, every day when it would be, you know, if you see people today with their glam squads, even before they go outside or they're on the radio or on TV, that wasn't the case back then. And I suppose I'm very much the same. People say to me, how long does it take you to get ready on the red carpet? And I'll be like, 20 minutes. That's all the time I've got really at the night. I have children and I haven't got the latest tuxedo. I've got the tuxedo that is the best tuxedo, which is a Henry Paul tuxedo, Henry Paul evening suit. Henry Paul invented the evening suit. An evening suit should be navy blue. I know all the facts behind it, and I know I've got the best. That is the best evening suit.
And it is how you wear it, and people will notice that more than whether or not, or maybe he's had that suit 10 years, or I saw him wear that before. And I think, yeah, if you can strut out in whatever you want, as long as you're happy in it, that's surely the most important thing.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Style to me doesn't change. We talk about Hollywood greats from the 1960s and 70s, and we're in, you know, 2022. A great evening suit is a great evening suit. That's it. Yes, you can change. Yes, you can do it in camouflage. Yes, you can try to modernize. Nothing wrong with that. I love individuality. I really, really do. Because I can see the confidence in them. I can see that. That's absolutely amazing to me. It's not something I'm an individual maybe because I choose to be very staid in what I'm comfortable in. You know, I always joke that I don't own a pair of trainers. This amazes people, really. And they're like, what have you got against trainers? I'm like, absolutely nothing. Love trainers. I love them for running. I love them for down the gym. I just don't wear them. Don't judge me on it. And I won't judge you on, you know, but it's just not my, you know, it's just not what I'm into. And that's, you know, it's a big thing about being judged. I'll never judge anyone on what they're wearing, as long as people are happy and confident and positive. And that's what we try to bring in World Wear. And we're trying to produce a brand that, from the buying experience to the, you know, the materials, to engulf a piece of World Wear every day into their outfit or whole outfit would be lovely. But that's what we're trying to do. And we're trying to do this. You know, we were talking about, again, just the meeting we had a minute ago, about what does luxury mean anymore? And, you know, almost luxury to some people was meaning expensive. And we were saying that's not what it means. You know, sort of luxury means it's being the best. And when you're saying the best, it's, you now have to tick so many boxes of it being sustainable, where it's made, the comfort, and the price point. And yes, it's like, I am confident that our £30 t-shirt is one of the best t-shirts you can buy in the market in the world. And I will hand my hold on. And I will give you the credentials to why it is. I've also been in the industry for 20 years. I've worn more t-shirts than, you know, I can ever remember. So we've done all our we've done all our research here, and we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to say we are providing the, you know, and you can say they can rival the most expensive brands, and they do. You know, yeah. We're trying to make it too attainable to as many people as possible. But I guarantee our stuff will last a lot longer than a lot of the stuff out there at the moment.
I like that you're trying to redefine luxury, because I think people might class an item of clothing in their wardrobe as luxurious and lovely, and then never wear it. And I think that's such a shame. I think, why wait for a special occasion to put on something that makes you feel amazing? Cool. And if everything that you wear every day feels amazing, then that's great. It's going to give you.
You should feel exactly. Whether, you know, those sort of elements of what you're looking for, maybe looking amazing going out, or maybe looking amazing going to the office, or for a cup of coffee, or at home, that shouldn't change. You know, you should feel, even like, say, you know, if you're at home in your joggers or loungewear or everything else, they should still be stylish oriented. They should still be the best, you know, some of the best fabrics you can have. It doesn't change. You do that. That's your most relaxing time. You know, everyone says, well, why are you doing t-shirts or sweatshirts? Like, aren't you into tailoring? Yes, I love tailoring. It's one of my passions in life, but I'm not going to, majority of my time, most people see me on the red carpet or at events or fashion weeks and stuff like that. Yes, I'm going to be in a suit because I want to be in a suit at that time. It's appropriate. But 70% of the time when I'm playing with my children, or I'm taking them to nursery, or I'm in the studio, or taking the dog for a walk, I'm not in a suit. Mm-hmm. I'm in t-shirts, and I'm in sweatshirts, and I'm in chinos.
I guess it's worth saying to anyone listening to this, David is wearing a black t-shirt and a black cap. Just in case you were wondering. I'm not with him in the same room, but it's what I can see on the screen. And he's in his white boxes, right? You're in white boxes right now.
I'm not going to show you what I've got underneath the table. That's so different.
I've just had the most random question pop into my head. I wonder if anyone's ever asked you this. Maybe it's a bit morbid, but maybe it's not. I mean, I love talking about death. What have you thought about this? What would you want to be buried or cremated in? Outfit wise, has anyone ever asked you that before?
I have had people tell me that they have buried some of their family in my clothing I've designed before.
Okay, and how does that make you feel?
Because they loved it so much. It makes me feel like, I suppose it was a bit odd at first. And I suppose if you had an impact, I suppose, on someone, and they love their clothing so much and they want to be buried, and you can't feel anything but
it's wonderful.
But a bit of respect for that, really. So absolutely. What should I be? Dear me, not sure. Don't think I really care. I'm dead.
No. You think about it now.
Something.
If you don't declare what you want right now, someone might put you in trainers. How would you feel about that?
That's very, actually, Chris, you've got a really good point here, actually. That's very true.
I guess you'd come back and haunt them.
Something that should be very biodegradable. Let's put it that way. So I don't leave an impact on the environment. So my clothes don't leave an impact, and I don't leave an impact on the environment. Yeah. Let me just say that. But
I haven't
quite thought about that one yet. The well wear, definitely well wear, absolutely.
Live and die by the brand.
Yeah, well, maybe it should just be the white Speedos, because that's what I suppose everyone would expect.
That's what we know you as, and that is your identity. So, great. Let's move on to the one lesson, one piece of advice maybe you'd like to share, something that you've learned from glittering your turds. So having that massive shock and being dropped for that campaign and everything you've done since, what have you learned from that experience?
I think I've already probably said it, Chris, in many ways. It's about that getting things wrong or bad situations isn't necessarily a, a bad thing. I think you learn a lot from mistakes, and move on, and having that ability to be able to move on from that is not a terrible thing. People think failure or mistakes is hard, but it's not a failure on any regards. I failed at, so much stuff. We fail every we're constantly within the brand. We haven't got everything right, of course. I haven't got everything right in 20 years. But as long as you learn from it and carry on, that's the most important part. There's, you never have regrets about is something. Never regret making a mistake. As long as you learn from it and rectify it. Mistakes only have regrets for something that you didn't do in life, I think. That's my biggest thing. But sometimes when you try everything and you strive for something and you try different things, you're going to have failures. And that's an important part of life to learn. But there's a lot of pressure on not to fail with students and children and exams, and that goes on in life. The earlier you learn that, the better in many ways.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I've learned. There was a saying that people should be judged on how their patience on when they have nothing, and then their behavior on when they have everything. Is a big thing. I've seen a lot of people that once they have made it, once they have or they perceive they have made it, they can forget their roots. They can forget the people who have helped them get there. You've got to try and stay humble. Don't believe your own hype, as I always sort of say. I think it's quite an important part of life.
Yeah. What's the one thing, tangible or otherwise? I mean, it could have been your agent, could have been an excellent pair of chinos, something that got you through that time and helped you to glitter your turd.
What would it be? I mean, as I mentioned earlier, my sort of love of animals at that time would have been, like all my sort of bad times would have been, helped very much with the companionship of my dog walk.
Great.
That's my, still to my day, is my bad morning, bad afternoon, whatever, is a dog walk and a bit of fresh air and a bit of thinking time to myself. Allows me to think, give a bit of different perspective and a bit of thought. You'll never have sort of love and companionship that a dog will ever, from anything else that a dog will give you. I disappear for 5 minutes, my dog greets me like I've been gone for 3 days. It's just incredible. So that's why I Battersea Dogs Home and Cats Home is one of my favorite charities, and work with Nikki Tibbles on her dog charity as well. That's why I try and do so much, because they always have been. I've had dogs since I was three or four years of age, and they're an important part of my life. So that's what I imagine I would have done. I can't remember what I did, but I imagine I would have chucked my bag probably across the room, grabbed a dog lead and gone for a walk. And everything when I got back was probably slightly better.
Yeah. When the chips are down, spend time with the dog.
The Gandhi family loves a cup of tea. A cup of tea seems to remedy anything in life. It's something to celebrate. You get a cup of tea, bad day, you have a cup of tea.
Mate, that comes up so many times. We are British through and through. We just can't get away from the fact that a cup of tea cures all ills and sorts out all problems.
Yeah, there you go.
So now we're going to listen to Lucy about how they glittered their turd.
Okay.
I just want to share my story of my turds, my three children. They all glitter. My eldest is 20, nearly 26. She's always cared for my younger turds. She's amazing. Gives too much of herself, but she's a beautiful human being. My middle one is autistic and has lived a life of exclusion and misdiagnosis. When he was six, somebody said to me that I would see him in the dock of a court being charged with something because people didn't understand him. When he was 18, that very nearly happened. And now he's 23, nearly 24, and he lives semi-independently. He's a little bit lonely, but baby steps. He's an amazing human being. And my little one, Nancy, has got cystic fibrosis. When she was born, I was absolutely grief-stricken that she would experience a life of medical trauma. But she's 11 and she's incredible. She's fierce. She shines. She tests me every single day. Yeah. All my turds glitter. They're amazing.
I love that. I think that's the first time I've heard that someone's children are called turds. But they sound incredible and they sound like an amazing team. You've got children, so have you ever called your children turds?
Call them a lot worse sometimes. No, I always say with children, you have the highest, sometimes you have the highest highs and sometimes the lowest lows bring up children. Mm. They can be, they can really test everyone's patience, but at the same time, it takes a little smile of them and it's all forgotten about. This is, I always thought it was a cliche that friends and other people told me that you don't think you're ready and you don't think, how am I going to love this little person that comes out? And when they do, it's just this natural instinct and you just will protect them any way you can. It sounds like, was it Lucy? Sounds like her children do the same for her and her younger ones. And I mean, I can only ever hope that, and she's already sort of showed anyway, that sibling love between the two and protecting your little siblings and is a wonderful, wonderful element. It's incredible.
Yeah.
You're a twin, aren't you?
Yes, and it's the best thing in the world. Yeah, it is the best. I feel sorry for anyone who's not a twin. Because, it's a bond like no other. And I know, I don't know any different, but, you know, you are, as they say, born with your best mate. Feel very, very lucky. Very lucky to have her. Well, thank you. All that's left now to do is to cheers. I don't know if you've got a drink nearby. If not, you're just going to have to imagine it.
I don't, honestly. I've got a bottle of water. Isn't it bad luck to cheers with water, though?
Who said that?
I don't know. I might have made that one up.
Oh, no. Well, forget you said that. I'm cheersing with a glass of water to all of life's turds, to your turd. It's excellent time for someone to walk in. To being dropped and to a life well lived after that.
Thank you, Chris. Well, here's to your turd as well. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Well, I think it's reassuring that sometimes scary, uncharted roads lead to better and brighter things. I hope that you think so too. I also hope that you're asking yourself what items of clothing you would want to be buried or cremated in. Personally, I think I'd probs be in some fancy dress, maybe a cat outfit, probably something quite extra. Until that fateful day though, I will continue to wear clothes that make me feel happy, and I very much hope that you will be doing the same. Thank you, David, for sharing your turd tales. Thank you, Lucy, for telling us that your children are your glittery turds. Remember, if you want to share your turd glittering tales, you can leave me a voice note on the number written in the episode notes. Okay, so thanks so much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. And I hope I'll see you around here again soon. Until then, loads of love. Bye.